Om Mangalam Guru Devaya Devye Matriksha Mangalam Mangalam Bhakta Brindebhyo Sarva Lokaya Mangalam Om Stapakaya Chidharmasya Sarva Dharma Sarupine Avatar Varishta Rama Krishnaya Mangalam Sri Gurubhyo Namaha. So today is Lalita Panchami. A very auspicious day. We worship, we do our Sri Chakra Puja this day, and we also did all the mantras for the Sri Chakra in a simplified form in the fire. So everybody got to take part. And afterward, those who can, who stay, we have something special treat. We have Amrita from the Puja, some special potion. Divine elixir is created with thousands of mantras. That ancient story, the train of the ocean. Right, that churn of the ocean we do with all mantras. And then Amrita comes out. And with that Amrita, we worship the 64 billion devatas in the Sri Chakra, including Lalita Tripura Sundari, one of Ma Kali's primary rupas. So the Amrita, the prasad from that we have, we can give out. Very rare thing. So we're starting chapter 6 and 7 of the Chandi. Six and seven. So what happened thus far? Most recently, what happened?
Well, we left off with Ma being asked if she wants to go back and willfully take her place
right.
At the
side. We ended it with a very tempting, alluring a marriage offer, right?
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, you remember some of the important points. So, Sumba Nishumba, right? So after the first episode being told by the sage Medus to Samadhi and Surata, the first story was the killing of Mahishasura, a very gross animalistic demon, buffalo demon, representing very gross ego, lust, anger, greed, its most unrefined animal nature. So the gods didn't know what to do. They went. All the devas, Indra and all the devas, went to Vishnu and Shiva, and they became angry. And some light and shakti shot forth from their foreheads, and from all the bodies of all the devas came forth great light and shakti, and created an infinite pillar of light. That's mentioned in many scriptures in different ways. And that shining like 10,000 suns, yet cooling like 10,000 moons. Right, that and the Devi Bhagavatam gives that description, very beautiful, and then slowly taking the form of a woman, of a Devi, right, and then all the devas gave their weapons or shaktis from the shakti of their weapons back to the goddess, and that goddess immediately it took an hour to read. It actually takes 5 minutes to read, an hour to describe, but it took a second to accomplish. Within a second, Mahisha's armies were destroyed, Mahisha's general to destroy, and then Mahisha was killed, was pinned down and killed. Tomorrow is Shasti, right? With the day when Ma Durga arrives. So sitting where I'm sitting now will be a beautiful Ma Durga. She's in the Himalayas now. Lord Shiva is going to bring her home tomorrow. She'll stay for 4 days. So we'll worship her very elaborately on Sunday morning. So hope everybody can come. But that this form of Mahishasura Mardini, the killer of Mahisha. But once they were, then the devas recited a beautiful hymn, which Kirichi chants. I first heard from Kirichi's mouth this Shakrari Stiti, right? Such a beautiful hymn.
You can do one line.
You can do one. Let's hear one line.
Shakradaya Suraganani Hateti Virye Tasmin Duratmani Surali Balecha Devya Tam tushtuhu pranati namra sirodharamsha vagbihi prahasa pulko gamacharu deha.
So beautiful. And the meter is exquisite meter. Huh? And meaning is also exquisite. But the conclusion of it, the gods realized that her form is all pervades this entire universe through her shakti. Her shakti pervades everything. That's the first line, actually. It says like this. Her shakti pervades everything. Pervades every movable, this whole movable universe, right? And that means that they themselves are also her, right? And their shakti is her shakti, right? And so they had forgotten this and let some demon come up, very gross demon. But by remembering, immediately that demon was vanquished, right? When she appeared their own shakti. They realized it was their own shakti. And so then they pray at the end of that beautiful long hymn,
they pray for a boon that if ever again we're troubled by bothersome demons, right? Again, if we simply remember, you immediately come and end our suffering, right? And then she appeared and says, yes, I'll do it. Tadastu, let it be so. Right? I granted, wish granted. And ask, and one more prayer we have, that anybody else who recites these hymns, right, that you will also come and immediately end their suffering. And it says, actually, in that final line, it says, remembering, forgetting you leads to our suffering, and remembering you ends our suffering. So that's the whole crux of this whole 700 verses, right? The first question that the king and the merchant asked the sage is, what is it that causes our suffering? What is it that makes us attached to things that bring us suffering? And his answer was Mahamaya. Right, Mahamaya is this, and who is this Mahamaya? This whole talk is about who is this Mahamaya? Mahamaya ki jai, we say, right? We worship this Mahamaya, right? Mahamaya, Sri Ramakrishna has two forms, primary forms, Avijamaya and Vijamaya. The power to make us forget and the power to make us remember. So what is that power to make us? Not that Ma is trying to make you forget her, right? But Ma creates this universe. She spreads out as this universe, as name and form. She appears as everything. And because of that, we see everything. Except Ma, right? She appears obviously as a universe, Yadavi Sarva Bhuteshu, in every living thing, right? But in such a way, because she's so obvious, we don't see her, right? She hides in plain sight, as some people say, right? So that's Mahamaya. She appears as this world of duality, and though it's only her, we don't see her in it, right? But as soon as you see her, what happens? Immediately the world disappears. Not the world doesn't disappear, but it disappears. Right, we gave the example a couple times this week of classic Vedantic example of a snake appearing in a rope. Right, you see a coiled rope and you think it's a snake. Right, but as soon as you see it, as soon as you see it as a rope, the snake disappears. And what do you say then? Ah, that rope looks a lot like a snake. Right, right. Instead of thinking that snake looks like a rope, maybe that snake's a rope. You see, that rope looks like a snake. So when you recognize Ma. This is Vijamaya Shakti. So you have to be trained how to see her. Vijamaya Shakti. Then when you see her, then you say, ah, this world, this goddess looks just like this world. Right? Which hymns we recited last night, Yadevi Sarva Bhuteshu, Matri Rupena, Lakshmi Rupena, Chanti Rupena, Trishna Rupena, Tushta Rupena, right? All these things, that goddess who appears as this, as appears as that, as appears as him, as appears as this. Right, so now she's not hiding. She's realizing, wow, Ma's become everything, right, and beyond everything. Well, doesn't change, right? So then she disappeared from their sight, and then again, due to some complacency, again there was another set of demons took over. This time more subtle. We read about these last night. The main culprits was.
Insecurity and pride.
Whose name are? Shumba and Nishumba. Right? And the yogis have thought a lot, long and hard, what Shumba and Shumba must mean. They say Shumba is ego. But more subtle, not like Mahishasura, just a gross, obvious, monstrous ego, right? But more subtle ego, wanting to be the center, wanting to take credit for everything. Right? And Indra's nature is, the problem with Indra, again and again we told many stories last night about different times when Indra takes himself too seriously and falls, right? The thing is, when we get a little power, we get a little prestige, we get a little money, a little influence, a little fame, we start thinking, wow, I'm important, I'm powerful, I'm rich, I'm famous, right? But not knowing whose power that is. A second ago they realized, oh, it's only her power that's become everything. But when you forget, that's called ego. You start taking credit, right? And so Shumba has another, his brother is so much like him that they're the same person, Nishumba. So Shumba is inflated self-image, self-important. Nishumba is the opposite of that, right? It's like it's self-loathing and lack and insecurity and brokenness and emptiness, right? That's what's behind our ego. As we quoted Abbot George saying, behind a big front is a big back. Right, we find a big ego, there's usually some insecurity, some emptiness that's we're trying to fill. So Shumba and Nishumba always come together. So they again, slowly, more sneakily this time, they took over they took control of the hellish worlds, they took control of the human world, then they took control of Indra's world and all the world of gods. And they stole everything from the gods. Right? It's mentioned that when you go Om Swaha, all the offerings go into the mouth of Shumba and Nishumba. Right? Everything you do goes to Shumba and Nishumba. Right? They took control of, they took the offering, all those sacrificial offerings went to them. Right? You can see slowly how the ego can do this, right? Everything we do in our spiritual life is ultimately for ourselves. We're doing it for our benefit, for our enlightenment, for our advancement, for our importance, like this. We're chanting all the mantras and expecting the effects to go to our own mouth, not going to the gods, not going to the Lord. So the gods were again kicked out of heaven. But this time they remembered. This happened before. A long time ago, there was an horrible demon named Mahisha. He took over. And we remember what we saw from within our very being. Some Devi came out. The Shakti came out. And she gave us a boon. That if we remember her as the essence of everything, she'll save us again. Right? So this time, they knew what to do. They went to the Himalayas. And he sat in meditation and he recited Ya Devi Sarvabhuteshu, these beautiful prayers. That goddess that exists, that is established in everything, in all these different forms, all these different states of consciousness and existence. Right? We recited very very most recognizable hymn of the Chandi, Ya Devi Sarvabhuteshu, Namastasye, Namastasye. Right? At the end of which, Parvati came and sat there to take a bath in the river. Right, I'm summarizing because 3/4 of the people weren't here last night. So, took bath in the river. Parvati came and sat there. Parvati is the goddess, the daughter of the Himalayas. Right, so she's the one who lives inside the mountain. Right, so the yogis say that is Kundalini living inside this part of it, this mountain. Right, this human body. Right, and she asks, "Oh devas," my second favorite question in the Chandi. "Oh devas, who are you praying to over there? With your Yadevi, all your hymns and prayers," right? And then she answers, "You're praying to me after losing your position to Shumba and Nishumba." Right? And then a being came out of Parvati and answered, actually. Parvati asked, and then a being within Parvati came out and answered. "These prayers address me." Right? And so some form came out of Parvati. Right? And she's known as Kaushiki, right? The she who comes out of the sheath. Right? The yogis say that's Kundalini. Out of this body comes another god, and she says, then she took on the name Kali and sat on top of the Himalaya. We talked a lot last night that this is what here. Parvati comes up, Kundalini awakens, and sits on top of the mountain, sits on top of Shiva, which sits on top of Shava. Shiva is the top of the head, Sahasrara, and Shava, the dead body that she sits on, is this body. This is the sign of the awakened Kundalini. Right? And then to illustrate the point more, it says that her feet touched the ground and her crown scraped the sky, right? The full thing, the full illumined personality, right? Fully awakened Shakti, right? But so just remembering her, she appeared. Because as soon as you see her, she appears. Once you get scared of the rope, thinking it's a snake, and you see, no, let me look at me and see if it's a snake. And you see the snake, the rope disappears, fear disappears. So as soon as they see her, fear is gone, but still there has to be some drama in the story. You can't just end it so quickly. We have 9 nights. We have 9 nights to talk, right? Can't make it so quick. So seeing what happened, the end of last night's reading, as soon as some beautiful form came, as soon as this beautiful Devi comes, some divine commotion, some sound, actually she came as sound, as vibration, as om, as mantra, right? Divine sound. Shaking the world and trembling. It says her very sound, her bowstring shook the regions of hell, right? The whole world reverberated with her sound, right? And Shumba and Nishumba, actually first it's not even Shumba and Nishumba, they're servants. Who are their servants? Chanda and Munda, right? That's what we talk. Chanda and Munda, they're very good servants, which represent, the yogis say, anger and lust and anger, right? Lust and anger. And anger is only frustrated desire. So desire and frustrated desire, right? There are these reactions to the main weapons, the main generals, the main spokespersons, servants of Shumba Nishumba, the ego. So they see, and immediately they go to tell. They tell Shumba, their master, Shumba, you own everything, right? You're the master of everything, and there's this beautiful woman over there, right? You should be her master too. And what he says, that he says, it's not like you're so wonderful. Look what you've earned. He says you've stolen everything. Right, you've stolen the chariot of Kumara. You've stolen the water pot of Brahma. You've stolen Indra's elephant and bell. You've stolen everything. Right, so that's a very interesting thing. It's not like he's earned. You're so great because of what you've accomplished. You're so great because you've stolen everybody else's things, all the other people's things. Right, and so There's nobody more beautiful than her. You have all precious gems. What a precious gem of a woman is there. You should own her too. Go get her. You should marry her. Right? And so Shumba thinks, yeah, that's a very good idea. Right? And he sends one of his attendants, Sugriva. You go and you speak loving, romantic words to woo her. Right? And he goes to the Divine Mother and says just that. Shumba is a very powerful being. He has stolen everything. Right? And you are also a beautiful woman that he should definitely possess you. You should be married. You should marry him. Go to him in love or to his brother. Right?
Or
his brother, which is interesting.
Or you get dragged by your hair.
But then she says, actually, yeah, but then she, what's the verses are too good. We have to read them. It's worth a double night. Think this over and become his wife, right? So the Divine Mother, so it's interesting that we were talking about this last night, this idea of Shumba taking ownership of everything. Everything that's actually not his. So this is what the ego does. It takes credit for everything it hasn't done, right? Because we learned these whole hymns, this whole text is that she's the Shakti of everything, of everyone. Right, she doesn't. Nobody owns her. Our ability even to think we own something is her. She's the power behind everything. Right, and so stealing, it's like to boast. We were saying you boast about what you've stolen. Right, when you boast about anything, you're stealing somebody's things. Right, you know, it's like, oh, look what I've stolen. Look what somebody else has worked for and now is mine. Right, this is what an ego. But actually, anytime you take credit for anything, that's what you're doing. Look what's mine. That's not really not yours. It's been given to you by the Divine Mother, her Shakti. Everything, every power, every ability, every thought, every movement, right? So as soon as you think, oh, look what a wonderful thing I've done. As soon as you brag about anything, right, in a certain sense, you're stealing. It's not your power. It's not yours. This is the Divine Mother. She's done everything. She's the only one, right? So that's, you can analyze a little bit with these whole comments, right? And then the tendency is, I want even that power, I want to control, be under my control, right? Rather than surrender, right? We try to make God, we try to make Ma do what we want, become our servant instead of her servant, right? There's some subtle mistake, but so sufficiently enough to warrant a beheading, I think, eventually. So the goddess gives some of the most beautiful and funny dialogue. She says, "You have spoken the truth. You have said nothing untrue in this matter. Shumba is indeed the lord of the three worlds, along with his brother Nishumba. But how can a vow be broken?" She says, "When I was a young girl, I foolishly made a promise that only the man who would defeat me in battle would become my husband." Right. So this is, and so he says. So immediately the messenger challenges, don't be a fool, right? He's even the gods can't stand before Shumba and Nishumba. What can you, a mere woman, do? Right? Don't just go quickly out of love, surrender to him, right? Unless, don't be disgraced by being dragged to him by the hair. Right? So the goddess ends it saying, "It is true Shumba is strong and Nishumba heroic, but what can I do after taking my ill-conceived vow long ago? Go to the Lord Demons and tell him all I have son. You can do whatever he thinks proper." So now we're starting chapter 6, which starts a brief meditation mantra on Padmavati, the goddess within the lotus. "Your tender body shines like the jewel upon the hood of the Lord of Serpents, on whom you rest. You shine like the sun, and your three eyes are brilliant. You hold rosary, goad, skull, and lotus. A shining crescent moon decorates your crown. Ever existing within the gaze of Lord Bhairava, the Lord of Wisdom, upon you, Mother Padmavati, we meditate." Om. Vishuvacha, the sage made us, is continuing his story. After hearing these words of the goddess, the messenger, Shivaduti, full of anger, went to the king of demons and related them in detail. The demon king became enraged by these words of the messenger and addressed Durmalochana thus. Actually, one thing we'll see every time anything happens, Shumba or Nishumba, they always react with getting even more angry and even more angry and even more. So the first response is anger. Right? The next response will be even more anger. Then his lip will quibble in anger and he'll shake in anger and then they get really angry. Right? Because all these is his desire is being frustrated. His desire to be the controller of everything becoming frustrated, right? That's what leads to suffering in life, right? So he first says, Hey Dhumralochana, Go quickly with your army and drag that misbehaved girl here by her hair. If anybody tries to defend her, be he God or Yaksha or Gandharva, then kill him. Right. So just like in the story of Mahishasura, the different attendants and warriors have important meanings, right? So here also, Dhumna Lochan, these are the servants of the ego, right? What is Dhumna Lochan? Dhumna means smoke, smoky, right? And Lochan means eyes, right? So smoky eyes or smoke-filled eyes, right? So it's not much of a jump to know what this means. We have ignorance, delusion, right? Our vision is not clear. Right, that's the first thing the ego has to do is make our vision unclear. Because actually, it doesn't take much. Anybody can see that what you've stolen isn't yours, and you shouldn't take credit for it. Right, that doesn't take a genius, but you have to be so deluded that you don't see things for what they are. Right, so Dumilochana is the first servant. Hey, Dumilochana, go quickly, delude everything, and bring her to me. Sayid said. Then the demon Dhumilochana, as commanded by Shumba, went forth immediately with his army of 60,000 demons. On seeing the goddess seated in the snow-covered mountains, he yelled. He yelled at Ma, "Enemy!" That's a good thing to add up Ma, right? Right. We talked about in the Gita, Krishna says, "However you approach me, I respond." Right, so it means this is a great line that can be taken to be the universality of religion. Many people approach God in different ways. God responds in those ways. Also as enemy. If you want God as an opponent, she's an expert opponent. He's an expert opponent. Best fighter. Right. Any way you touch God, only benefit will come. So if you want to fight God, you'll become liberated. He'll win. She'll win. Nobody's ever won so far. Right. It's the best possible enemy. Enemy. Go at once to Shumba and Nishumba. If you do not go to my master right now, I will grab you by the hair and drag you there by force. The goddess said, "You have been sent by the king of demons. As you are extremely powerful and accompanied by this huge and mighty army, if you take me away by force, what can I do?"
Oh, maybe something.
I like these.
Something.
Upon hearing these words, Dumilochana attacked her. Ambika, merely uttering the sound, boom, thank you. There's a lot of history. You were here that night. The mantra, hum, right, reduced, and by chanting the mantra, hum, reduced Dumbarochana to ash, right, within a second, right? This huge thing, smoke, you blow it, it's gone, right? To clear the eyes is not that hard a thing, right? Just like this, right? But also we mentioned that we chant these mantras, who knows what's happening? Many things are happening. Many impurities are being destroyed. Even if you're not feeling anything, so many things are being corrected. In great anger, the army of the demon began to shower Ambika with arrows, spears, and battle axes. Then the carrier of the goddess, the mighty lion, shook his mane in anger and jumped on the army of demons. He killed some demons with the front claws, others he killed with his fangs, and others still by treading upon them with his hind legs. Striking them with his claws, he tore out the hearts of some and severed the heads of others. He cut many arms and heads off, and shaking his mane, he drank the blood from their hearts. Die. Within a moment, the angry lion, the mount of the goddess, destroyed the demon army. Hearing news of the death of Dumilochana at the hands of the goddess and the destruction of his demon army by her lion mount, the king of demons became furious, right? More angry. Right. His lower lip quivering, he commanded the two mighty demons, Chanda and Munda. Thus, hey Chanda, hey Munda, take a huge army of demons and go bring her here, dragging her by the hair or blinding her. If you doubt that you are able to do this, then let the demons wound her with their weapons. After wounding her and striking down her lion, bind Ambika and bring her to me quickly. Thus ends the sixth chapter entitled The Slaying of Dumilochana, found in the Devi Mahatmyam, the Markandeya Purana, spoken when Savarnya was Manu. See here. There's a few, one paragraph of some comments. Dubmilochana, whose name means smoke eyes, represents spiritual ignorance. Ignorance is easily vanquished with knowledge, just as darkness is defeated by light. The mantra Hum is known as the Kurcha Bija mantra and invokes the purifying fire of knowledge, which is sufficient to destroy ignorance. The Siddha Kunjika Strotam reveals the demons Chanda and Munda refers to lust and anger respectively. Just as conceit and self-loathing always go together, so also does lust and anger. Lust is selfish desire and anger is the result of this desire thwarted. So one more chapter we'll read. The slain, I'm not going to give it away. The laying of somebody. Chapter 7 starts with a mantra to goddess Matangi. Matangi Devi, also known as Nila Saraswati. No, I'm sorry, Matangi. We meditate upon you, sitting upon a throne of jewels, listening to the sweet sounds of parrots. Your body is dark, your foot rests upon a lotus. You wear a crescent moon upon your head. Wearing a garland of forest flowers, you play upon the strings of a veena. You are clad in red cloth, O goddess Matangi. You hold in your hands a cup made from conch shell. A slight, sweet, intoxicating fragrance comes from your face, which is decorated with the brilliant vermilion mark. Om. Sage said, at this command of Shumba, the demon army with Chanda and Munda at their head marched ahead in fourfold array, well armed with weapons and armor. They saw the goddess gently smiling, seated on her lion, on the high peak of the great mountain. Seeing her, the demons became excited to capture her and made ready with their bows bent and arrows and swords drawn. Ambika, the goddess, then became very angry with those enemies, and her face became dark with rage. From the center of her fierce, frowning forehead suddenly appeared goddess Kali, frightening to behold, armed with sword and noose. So this goddess that was manifesting, although she was called Kali, right, she seemed to be like a form of Durga, right? But from her anger, from her forehead, shot another form, another Shakti, goddess Kali, black, the black goddess. Wearing only a tiger skin, a garland of human skulls, and carrying a strange skull-topped staff, her flesh was withered, and her body was made only of skin and bones, giving her a frightening appearance. Her immense gaping mouth showed her large lolling tongue. Her eyes were sunken and blood red. Her roars filled all directions. So it's a beautiful or scary image of the Divine Mother, right? And so the question, oh, Dad's here. Sorry, we didn't have you say. I'm sorry, I didn't know you were here. Question is, this description of Kali is skin and bones with fangs and fierce, scary look. If we look at our Ma, she doesn't look this way, right? She doesn't look scary. We'll say, oh, Kali is a fierce goddess. We don't see it. I mean, I sometimes have a weird thinking God, Ma is a fierce god. I don't understand that view, right? So, but that's the question, is that to us, she may not look that way, right? But to a demon, she looks that way. Right, just like, so there's a line, there's a beautiful prayer to Narasingha, right, that says that, we chant it on the Shingha, as part of the Narasingha to Haven. It says that just a tiger or a lioness, right, is mother to it, the teeth, the mouth of a lion are affectionate to its prey, to its cubs. It holds, you know, it grabs the neck of its cub, and the cub just surrenders, and it puts it over here and licks it and licks it clean, right? Those same mouth is personification of death to its prey, right? You know, so it's all a matter of what's your relationship with it. To the ego, divinity is scary, fierce, frightening, death itself, right? To a devotee, she's beautiful, our mother, our lover, our friend, our beloved, our son, our daughter, so many relationships we have, right? So this is a very fierce form because she has to fight Chanda and Munda, desire and anger, right? Very, very ugly. Her opponent is ugly. The ugliest parts of us, our lust and our desire and our anger. So her form has to be more scary than that, you know. And it's very interesting. What does she hold? One of my favorites. It says a strange skull-topped staff. And we've mentioned this, but one time we were very lucky. Next to Mother's in Costa Mesa, there was one of these Halloween stores that opened up, and we walked in, and we're like, "Oh my God, a strange skull-topped staff." It was in the backyard. Eventually, it got rotted in the backyard. It used to be outside my couture.
It was only made of balsa wood. It was real lightweight.
We put it in front of my couture in order to keep suitors away. We put, you know, so people would keep everybody away from my, yeah, so people would leave my couture alone, you know, wouldn't be bothered, you know, seeing a strange skull top staff outside, right? But what is that strange skull top staff, right? This is that, our spine is that strain, and it's topped with a skull, right? She's holding our spine, right? Which is, once again, these are again references of Kundalini and Shumna like this, right? It's a beautiful image. She holds the skeleton, right? The spinal cord with a skull on top. This is one of her weapons. Some of the things she'll use it to clobber certain demons even. Very interesting, right? It's a great image. Her eyes were sunken with red, sunken and blood red. Her roars filled all directions. She attacked and slaughtered the army of demons, the enemy of the gods, and swallowed them whole. Grabbing elephants with her protectors, drivers, warriors, and bells with one hand, she threw them into her open mouth. Likewise, Calvaries with their horses, chariots, and charioteers were put into her mouth and hideously chewed up with her teeth. Some she grabbed by the hair, others by their necks. Some she trampled with her feet, others she crushed with her body. She caught the weapons shot by the demons in her mouth, and in her fury crushed them with her teeth. Destroying the army of mighty and wicked demons, she ate some and fiercely beat others. Some demons were killed by her sword, some was her skull-top staff, and still others by being ground by her teeth. Seeing the army destroyed, the demon Chanda rushed and attacked the awesome Kali. He showered the fierce-eyed goddess with terrible arrows, and the demon Munda hurled thousands of discs at her. These numerous discs disappeared into her mouth, looking like the sun disappearing into clouds. Roaring fiercely, her teeth gleaming in her terrible mouth, Kali laughed in extreme fury. The goddess, riding upon her great lion, then seized the demon Chanda and severed his head with her sword. Seeing the destruction of Chanda, the demon Munda attacked the goddess. In terrible anger, she killed him with her sword, leaving him lying on the ground. Seeing the valiant demon Chanda Munda destroyed, the remaining army panicked and ran in all directions. Kali, holding the severed heads of Chanda and Munda, came before Chandika, meaning the Durga, the supreme goddess in the story. Her voice filled with loud laughter and said, "I have brought you the heads of Chanda and Munda as animal offerings in the sacrifice of battle." Right, this is your offering to you. Oof. Right, and actually this is very important because even actually this week, these last 10 days in India and many places in Nepal, there many animals will be sacrificed. Mm-hmm. Right, especially in mountain regions like that. It's not a nice thing, but we don't find it nice, whatever it is. It is what it is. We don't find it very nice. But the scriptures say that it's symbolic. The real purpose, Pashubali. Right? Pashubali, beast, sacrificial, of sacrificing the beast. Right? So and so it's symbolic. And we also in meditation, part of the dhyan, the manasa puja we do to Kali every day in the puja, is we sacrifice, we pin down a goat that's anger. Right? It's lust. And cut off is it. And then, more elaborate pujas, and only not daily meditation. But then there's also in some places buffalo sacrifice comes from Mahishasura. Yeah. Then anger is sacrificed as a buffalo. The lust and anger is a goat and buffalo sacrifice, right? Now my sentiment feels that actually killing a goat and killing a buffalo won't help us get over anger and lust. It probably increases it. Right, it doesn't seem like something that would decrease our animal propensities, right? But the symbolism is there, whatever it may be, right? That's not our position. This is a real animal sacrifice in this battle, right? Anger and lust have been sacrificed here. Kali says, "I bring these to you, O mother," which is only her form, right? Very deep thing. You yourself will kill the demon brothers, Shumba and Nishumba. I've killed lust and anger, you kill Shumba and Nishumba. Right? Seeing, then the sage said, seeing the head of the demons Chanda and Munda brought to her, the auspicious Chandika said to Kali in playful words, "Because you have brought me both Chanda and Munda, You shall now be known in all the worlds as Chamundeti or Chamunda, the killer of Chanda and Munda. Right, so we the Navarna mantra Chamundaye Viche, the core of the mantra, right? Chamundaye, Chanda and Munda Viche. It's a, you can almost the sound of cut, right? Chamundaye Viche, that you are the one who cuts Chanda and Munda, who killed Chanda and Munda. So simply telling somebody, oh, you who a thousand millions of years ago in a different loka killed these two demons, Chanda and Munda. God doesn't need to be reminded of his of her actions, right? This is a prayer, right? You who killed Chanda and Munda, you kill Chanda and Munda. You remove lust and greed and anger, desire and thwarted desire, and our reaction to thwarted desire. It's a prayer, right? Just like you did that, you again do it here in this situation. Thus ends the seventh chapter entitled Saying of Chanda and Munda, found in the Devi Mahatmya of the Markandeya Purana, spoken when Savarni was Manu. Let's see one paragraph here. Goddess Kali is said to come from anger of the Divine Mother. She is one of her most fierce forms and embodies the destructive and transformative power of the goddess. A tigress is A tigress is seen as a loving mother to its cubs, but to her prey she appears the horrible death personified. So also is the all-loving and merciful Divine Mother seen as frightening to the dark parts of our personality that need purification. When lust and its byproduct, anger, are purged of self-interest or decapitated, they bloom forth as the true desire of the soul to love. Which is really what's behind Shumbha and Nishumbha, if we really go into it, which we will as the days go on. So thank you for your kind attention. Tomorrow night we'll read chapter 8. I think it's chapter 8 tomorrow, which is a great chapter on Rakta Bija. It's one of my favorite symbolism of Rakta Bija, and very, very wonderful. Is there any comments or questions? Before it gets too late? No is probably better. But I'm willing. Long is a long night. Jai Ma, Jai Mahamayi Ki Jai.